Hey, you guys. Happy Tuesday, or whatever the fuck day it is.
Yeah, Tuesday. Last night we saw that, Last Night in Soho?
Yeah, that's why we didn't stream yesterday, because we hadn't seen a movie, and I said, well, let's go see Last Night in Soho so we can talk about that on Tuesday.
Saw in the Dolby Theater.
Dolby! I've been waiting to see this for, a really long time.
I was impressed. It was much better than I thought it was going to be.
Alex Hammond asks, is this film a chick flick? Because that's the vibe I got when I saw the trailer. Not by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
I'm not really sure what genre I would call it. It's kind of a mystery thriller with
supernatural thriller
to
horror.
It. And it also kind of has a throwback sort of giallo look to it. And it's also kind of Edgar Wright, who directed it, he is was also on record as saying that he was inspired by Repulsion, the Roman Polanski film, and kind of like your early 70s Italian horror also.
Now, the trailer seems to spoil this movie. It doesn't. That's not, you're just only scratching the fucking tip of the iceberg with the trailer. So I was like, man, haven't they just given the story away? No, there's a lot more to it than that. It's like a supernatural thriller horror movie about this British chick from the country raised by her grandma. She's kind of sheltered. She goes off to college to go to fashion school. And she was real wrapped up into retro stuff. She's kind of like a hipster. She's big into the 60s because her grandma was into that. Her mom had died. She never met her mom.
No, she did.
Oh, her mom, she was a little kid.
Her mom killed herself when she was 7.
That's right, when she was 7. That's right. It was the other girl, I think, that... Well, no, she was talking about... It's beside the point. Anyway, she has this psychic ability. Her grandmother calls it a gift. And it's almost kind of like something out of damn Star Wars where they got, force visions or something. She can see the past, and she can see the spirits of the dead. And sometimes it's kind of like she's astrally projected into the past, where she's feels like she's in the place of this girl who's going through this thing. There's like a murder mystery going on, and there's a lot of shit we can't spoil because it would just totally fuck the movie up. There's all kinds of shit that happens out of left field. Do not see any reviews or spoilers. Don't read anything about the movie. Just go to see it. It's got a real good score, super good score, super good soundtrack, shot real well, color palette's really good. It's got a lot of kind of like elements of a gangster movie, elements of supernatural thriller. It's got kind of like some erotica angles to it. Lots of good song and dance acts in the fucking 60s and in goth clubs, because then the weird shit starts happening to where she starts kind of going goth, and her style starts changing, and they kind of draw parallels between the 1960s club scene and the present day goth industrial type scene. There is some interplay. She's having visions when she's in clubs and shit. And she's trying to unwrap this fucking murder mystery. And it fucking is weird as fuck. It's good. Real good.
I liked it very much.
Yeah.
I'm just... The thing about it, though, is that when we were watching it, like I said, when we saw the trailers, because I've seen the trailer a bunch of times, I was like, ooh, that looks really good. And like I said, it's Edgar Wright, who obviously did, Shaun of the Dead. He did Scott Pilgrim versus the World, Baby Driver. So he's done all these, he did the whole Cornetto trilogy, not just, he did Hot Fuzz and all that too. So I was really excited to see this, and I was like, ooh, that looks really good. It looks like a throwback to a giallo movie. And then when I was watching, I was like, but the trailer, I was like, God, it seems to give the whole thing away, in the sense that it establishes that she can see ghosts or psychic visions or whatever. It establishes that she's really into the 60s, and she's essentially having a vision of this woman that she sees back in the 60s, and you're led to believe that she's murdered and that the person who murdered her is still alive nowadays and is kind of after the main girl. So her name's Ellie, the character name, played by Thomasin McKenzie. And so when I was watching the movie, I'm just kind of like, well, I kind of hope that it does something else, because I thought that the trailer kind of spoiled the whole movie. But then it goes off in it, and I was like, oh, well, I did not expect that. I'm not saying it goes like off the rails, but it goes.
There's twists.
There's a twist that happens that.
A couple of them.
There's a couple twists that I actually did not see coming. The first one I kind of saw it, but not until right before supposed to see it. Yeah. And then the last twist, I was like, yeah, I didn't see that coming at all.
Yeah, and it kind of doesn't come out of just nowhere. They do kind of lay the groundwork for it if you're paying attention on some of the stuff. If you're paying attention, you're like, oh, okay. It foreshadowed something that happened later. But you have to know, you only notice it in, like, retrospect. But aside from all that, it's a fun watch because it has a lot of cool song and dance numbers in it, like cabaret-style shit back in the 60s, a bunch of hotties in it, a lot of sexual undertones, kind of like gangsters, violence and shit, cops and fucking psychics and goth scene stuff happens in it, good music. You're like, what the fuck is going on? She's kind of going into these trances and going into the past and seeing what happened to this girl. Some of the shit, she tries to fucking stop it. And on a couple occasions, she actually got a reaction to people in the past. So it kind of leads you to wonder if people in the past sometimes saw her. Because she seemed to influence. Remember, a dude reacted to her. But it was kind of deniable. You don't really know, did she just envision that, or did that dude in the past see her for a second? It's hard to know.
It is
a psychic thing that's going on, though. She's not imagining it. Although people think are telling her she's crazy.
Well, and they do leave a little bit of ambiguity in the sense that, they establish that her mother had the similar thing to her, like had the psychic powers and couldn't handle it. Yeah. Like her mom had also gone to London, like the big city. She's from Cornwall and she kind of lives out in the country. And like you said, she's kind of old fashioned and like kind of sheltered and stuff. But she just has this love for London, but more the London of the 60s and more like an idealized London of the 60s.
Yeah.
So it's almost kind of like, I feel like she, intellectually, she thinks she can handle going to this big city, but then when she gets there, it's like way more overwhelming than she thought. So she kind of has a hard time fitting in. And then, but they do kind of set up that her mom like had went on a similar journey and couldn't handle it and ended up killing herself. So they do introduce some ambiguity that it could be that Ellie is maybe just having some kind of like breakdown like her mom had. I don't think that's the case.
No, it's not.
But I have seen a couple other reviewers that said you could read it that way if you wanted to.
Yeah, but it would just be... Statistically, fucking no. The chances of her just happened to being in the right place at the right time and meeting the right people. No, it wasn't. It was a paranormal thing. And one thing I did like about the movies, having had experiences that people would call paranormal, near-death experience, out-of-body experience, poltergeist stuff. This is like a realistic portrayal of, I've never experienced anything quite like this. I have had some dreaming true, out-of-body experiences happening in dreams, or kind of like lucid dreaming. Sometimes just out-of-body experience, that one time out-of-body experience while I was just trying to fall asleep, other people saw it happen, and then near-death experience during my coma. And this is just kind of like, this is a good portrayal of what it's like. It's not like something out of a damn cartoon or superhero movie or anything. It's naturalistic, and it's kind of how they show it in this movie. I liked it. Really, I liked it. Well, everything seemed very plausible based on my personal experience, real plausible, that things like this happen.
I kind of liked the way they, they integrated the past and the present. So it's like you weren't entirely sure. Like I said, at first, it starts off, what ends up happening is she first goes to, the college, and she stays in the dorm. And she ends up having to room with this passive-aggressive cunt named Jocasta. Jocasta, was that girl?
Yeah, some shit like that.
Yeah, she's horrible.
Fake names and shit.
And, she's going by her first name, what I mean? So that girl was just the worst. And so, after all of this, like, bad shit happens, Ellie decides that she's gonna go, like, get a room. So she goes to get, like, a bedsit. And at that point, she gets this room that's rented by Diana Rigg. Now, this was actually Diana Rigg's last movie because she died in 2020.
I didn't even recognize her.
Yeah, she plays the landlord, Miss Collins. Yeah. And so she ends up, you know, renting the room, which belonged to Sandy back in the 60s. So that's maybe why the connection came about. And at first she just starts having like dreams about her, but they're really like realistic dreams where she's kind of like her identity and that of Sandy are kind of like meshing into one another. Like they keep switching back and forth. Like when they show part of this in the trailer, like where they're at this big like nightclub scene, you know, with Sandy there. And then sometimes you see Sandy on this side of the mirror and then you see Ellie on the other side of the mirror.
Yeah.
But then sometimes you see Ellie in place of Sandy. Yeah. And that's filmed really well. Like, I really like the way they integrated that.
The way I interpreted that, though, is that she's being shown Sandy's past and she's being shown it through Sandy's eyes.
Yeah.
It's she's having an out-of-body experience where she's being shown the past in that way. Sometimes she sees it in first person, sometimes she sees it
in third person,
which that's a very dreamlike type situation, which that checks out for out-of-body experience. Kind of like that.
And there are some kind of like physical manifestations too, because she comes back at one point and there's like a hickey on her neck.
Yeah. And then there's sometimes when she's seeing the past or re-experiencing it on a couple of occasions, if you really pay attention, some of the people that she's seeing seem to react to things that she does. But, you know, because she tries to get their attention, but you're not really sure if she imagined it and that's how you saw it. It doesn't matter. It's ambiguous. But my take on it is that she was going into the past and influencing to a small amount of what was happening. But she couldn't change anything.
Yeah, because it had already happened. Yeah, and like I said, they established early on that she has, like, a psychic ability.
Yeah.
So she's seeing what happened, or at least she's seeing her perception, like, is being filtered through her.
Yeah, it's being shown
perception.
To her.
Right. So it's like she might be misreading certain things. Like, that could be as well. But, yeah, so I also really liked when she first starts having these dreams or visions or whatever, and they kind of show this in the trailer as well, is that she's really into it. Like, she can't wait to get back to the apartment and, like, go to sleep and everything like that, because she's kind of this little mousy, shy kind of girl, but it's, like, just her kind of associating with Sandy. Like, she changes her hair and, like, starts being more confident.
She starts living vicariously in a way through Sandy, through these experiences where she's kind of, like, in possession of her, in a way, of Sandy. She's actually just being shown Sandy in the past. I think she's going into the past and seeing it.
Yeah.
And actually, maybe people in the past may have been aware that something paranormal was happening or something strange had happened. They wouldn't have been aware that a girl in the future had come back to see it.
Right.
But she seemed to have been affecting the environment a little bit. And because she was so kind of sheltered and shy, she's now in the position of kind of living vicariously through this wild 60s really cool club girl who can sing and entertain and had dreams of being this star, this nightclub singer star. But it goes bad for her, you know what I mean? But she did have this fucking connection to this chick because she was really fucking cool. So she tries to solve this girl's murder, you know what I mean? And fucking it just goes from there. It's a lot of unexpected shit happens. Fucking well worth it, okay? I enjoyed this one just as much as I enjoyed Dune. They are very different movies, but I recommend this one too. This is a good one.
Yeah, I liked this one a lot. I mean, I knew that I was going to like this one, but I think I liked it more than I was expecting to.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be good, but I was going to like, yeah, it's going to be okay. No, it was good. Really good.
Really good. And like I said, I think like the twists at the end, I really liked where that went because I didn't see it coming.
Right.
Always great to see Terrence Stamp in a movie. He's fantastic. I love him. He's good in everything. Man, I need to watch The Limey again now that I'm thinking about it. But
it's got good horror shit in it, action in certain places, got real good score, soundtrack, pretty compelling story. You get pulled into it pretty good. Good characters. The characters in the past are really cool. Real cool song and dance numbers. Hot fucking chicks. 60s chicks fucking doing cool shit. Sometimes bad shit. Cool 60 dude who's kind of like the fucking king of the scene and fucking how he's doing his shit, you know. a lot of the shit he's doing, you know, it wouldn't fly today because the 60s was a very different time. But you could see how in the 60s that dude would have been really fucking cool. Was he cool? You'll find out. But he was... all the dudes, all the British dudes in the 60s, fucking, you see the difference in the club scene back then. You know, a lot of them were old. A lot of these guys were in their 50s and 60s still fucking throwing money around, throwing their dick around on these fucking young girls. Because these girls fucking didn't have jobs.
That's a bunch of old leches.
Old lechery motherfuckers trying to get paid. I mean, you know, back in those days, you know, a single young woman couldn't really make a living for herself. She had to have a boyfriend. So these dudes were kind of fucking taking advantage of that shit. And, but, you know, they just had some cool 60s dances that they thought were cool in the 60s. And
like the top, I liked that marionette one.
Yeah, it was really good.
That was cool. That
it was like something from a cabaret from an old 30s or cabaret. Yeah, like and they reenacted
a little bit of a burlesque type
of burlesque
shit.
Fucking a lot of fucking sexy fucking lingerie at certain point times, you know. Fucking voluptuous fucking hotties and shit. If guys will like it just as much as girls will like it. It's good.
Danny Rowling asked if there was any nudity. Was there?
I don't think there was.
If there was, it was very brief. There's a lot of kind of like sexy outfits.
And sexual innuendo.
I don't know if there was any actual
nudity.
Most of it might have been implied. There might have been some boob, but I can't really
simulated
remember.
Sexual acts. But it's real brief. Shit happening. Girls blowing dudes behind stage and shit.
Yeah, that's
like
what
that.
I was thinking of.
There's a lot of shit like that going. But it's nothing a kid can't handle, I don't think. Well, actually, it's rated R, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
So, you know.
Because as it gets darker, it gets pretty
violent. Yeah.
It
gets pretty fucking violent.
And bloody.
And supernatural. Fucking ghosts and shit. Fucking all kinds of cool shit happens in it.
Yeah, there's a lot of ghosts, like, kind of... I liked the look of the ghost, like, that Ellie's seeing.
Not only can she kind of go into the past and relive it, she's also being confronted in the here and now by ghosts. That's all part of it, too. Ghosts giving her messages, and they're real kind of vague. She can't really see them too well. You just have to see the movie. It's good. It's real good.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. And like
she
I said...
She can't control her abilities. She's not some kind of Jedi master with, like, the ability to control shit. She's just got, in Star Wars terminology, she would just have what they call force affinity. In other words, the force does things to her. She can't control it.
Yeah, she doesn't really have any control over what she sees or when she sees it.
It's doing it to her from an outside. Her subconscious just does it to her. Ghosts coming through her subconscious, and they manifest, too, evidently.
Danny Rowling says, what's tomorrow's show about? Doppelgangers.
Doppelgangers.
We're going to talk about doppelgangers. Yeah. That's what won the poll. Yeah. I was going to say, too, I really like, the soundtrack for this is incredible. I would actually buy the soundtrack for this, not going to lie. Mostly kind of 60s pop songs. You got like Dusty Springfield, Petula Clark, Sandy Shaw, all that kind of stuff. Had some 80s stuff in there. Had some Susie and the Banshees.
Yeah.
Happy House was playing at the Halloween party.
A lot of cool 60s stuff. Was in it too. It's just shit that gets caught in your head, like going downtown. Downtown.
Yeah, yeah,
all that shit's in there, you know. Yeah, it's good.
I didn't realize the one scene where Sandy auditions and she sings Downtown.
Yeah.
That's actually Anya Taylor-Joy, that actress. That is actually her singing.
Okay. Yeah. She did
so I was just kind of like, well, shit. I thought it was probably like dubbed over, but it's
No. If you go to drama school, you got to learn how to sing. They start with musicals.
Yeah, but it's I kind of feel like it's pretty common for maybe not so much, but I kind of feel like back in the old days they'd always have kind of like the actress and they'd have some other like a professional singer dub them over. But that's actually her singing.
A decent actress can sing.
Yeah,
and
you
an
would
actor
think.
Too. They can sing.
But
they
yeah, so dance. Yeah, she sang Downtown when she was like auditioning. Yeah. And I like too, I noticed something that a lot of the 60s songs that were in this were covered in the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, you had Always Something There to Remind Me. They had the original for that, which obviously
Eloise.
Was Eloise.
Damned did that one.
The Damned did that one.
If you're Gen X, you like fucking punk rock and goth and shit and new wave, you'll recognize all this shit.
And at the Halloween party, other than the Susie and the Banshee song, they also played R. Dean Taylor, There's a Ghost in My House, which The Fall covered.
Yeah.
Well, there was one other one, too, that I can't remember what it was. Oh, there was Got My Mind Set on You, which George Harrison covered in the 80s. So it's interesting. So even if you're like an 80s kid
and you
wouldn't know like the 60s original ones, I knew like the original ones too, but if you didn't, then you would recognize them from the covers.
All right. So it's not really, I think I pretty well established or hope to establish with you people that, you people, That this is not really a disposable horror movie. Most of them are disposable. I can tell the difference. This one will actually be remembered. I believe so. This will be kind of like The Seven Sins or... what else would you put it on par with?
I don't know.
They'll remember this one, I think.
Well, like I said, I don't even know. This is a genre-defying movie.
Yeah.
It definitely has horror elements.
It's a bunch of genres.
Because, like I said, it has some creepy ghost shit, and it's violent and kind of bloody, like, especially toward the end. And there is, you know, there's a murder mystery element to it, too, but... There's a lot of other stuff going on in this. So it's kind of like, yeah, you can call it a horror movie, but that's kind of like, I guess that's a little reductive.
I think it's a notable movie. I don't think it'll go down as strong as, say, like The Shining. I mean, that's fucking a classic of all times. But it'll go down like some of the ones that you remember from the 90s and the 80s shit that you can name. I don't know if it'll do that box office-wise, but just artistically, when you see it, you'll remember it.
It does seem like most of the horror channels that I watch, that I subscribe to, have really, really dug this movie.
Yeah, it's good.
So,
good quality. Really,
yeah.
Good quality.
And it really does seem like, really, the only criticism of it I've seen is that some people didn't like, they thought, like, you know, the writing wasn't as good, but they talked about, like, how good the visuals were and, like, the sound design and everything. But... honestly, I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I feel like most horror fans like really, really dug it.
I'll take this one over the new Halloween, and I like the Halloween.
But this is way better.
Yeah.
Well, because I liked Halloween Kills too, but that's just like a standard horror movie.
Yeah.
This one is kind of like I don't know if I'd go so far as to call it an art film
because
it's not really an art film, but it has.
It's got a lot more mainstream appeal than a heart than a
yeah, because I feel like even if you didn't like horror movies, you could still get into this. You know what I mean?
This one, man, what would be a comparable movie that is a classic?
That's what I mean. I'm trying to like feel like because I listen to like Edgar Wright like talking about what his inspiration for this was, and like I said, you know, Italian horror, like giallo movies, because like I said, it does have a murder mystery element to it. It does have a very 60s look to it. I don't want to say there's a little bit of like funny shit in it, but it's not like, you know, like Shaun of the Dead funny. Like it's not a parody or anything like that. It's pretty serious. But then it kind of has like an over the top. I don't know. It almost kind of reminds me of like maybe like Brian De Palma or some of like those kind of like erotic thriller type things.
Yeah, you know, I was almost going to say it reminded me of Eyes Wide Shut, but faster paced with better music and fucking better looking.
And characters. A little bit more, and like a little bit more like over the top, violent
psychic shit,
with supernatural stuff.
Yeah,
that's probably like, it's really hard to like think of something. Like I said, he said that Repulsion was a big influence on this, which I can kind of see, but Repulsion, you know, this is like Repulsion, but like a giallo movie, but also like an erotic thriller, but then also like a bloody horror movie with ghosts in it. You know what I mean? So like I said, it's like genre defying. It's hard to kind of like put my finger on.
I almost want to say this is the story, not the feel or the motif, but the story is almost something kind of like out of one of the Star Wars Jedi role-playing games, where you have like a young apprentice Jedi trying to calm fucking restless spirits and solve a fucking murder to kind of restore justice and to fucking restore the balance of the Force. And she can't use the Force. She's like a novice. It has that concept, but it's happening in two different time zones, the 60s and the modern day. I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. Actually, I wouldn't mind seeing it again, to be honest.
Oh, I'd see it again. Yeah.
I
the music.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that soundtrack is just, it was so, so good.
And it's just weird how you have like a psychic thriller that has kind of like psychic investigations and detective work mixed with horror. And then there's song and dance acts and shit.
Yeah.
From the 60s and fucking...
But see,
and
that's cool.
Day, all happening.
I like...
You're in these clubs and fucking...
Yeah.
People are fucking... cool dance scenes and shit, and you're like going, you know, wow, that's kind of interesting.
It's very stylish.
Stylish, yeah.
Well, I like movies that you can't really put comfortably into one genre. I'm not saying that I don't like ones that are just straight up horror movies, because obviously I do, but I like movies that are kind of like that you can't really super defined.
She's
like
standing
this one.
There in the audience, you know, in the past, and she's standing in the theater watching auditions and watching shows, and she's just like blown away over how competent these 60s girls are. You know, they're all fucking gorgeous. They all sing and dance, badass costumes and shit. And then she's just kind of like, in some ways, kind of like horrified with what's going on. You have all these fucking talented, good-looking people that are kind of getting fucked over, you know?
Yeah.
And she was definitely impressed with the 60s, but she was impressed with the 60s before. She was fantasizing about it, looking at record albums and stuff, and making 60s clothes and shit.
Yeah, because that's the thing. I mean, the opening scene is her swishing into her bedroom, like in Cornwall, with a dress that she made out of, like, old newspapers.
Yeah, in a 60s cut.
In, like, a 60s cut, yeah. And she's got, like, 60s, like, pop divas, like, all over her walls. And she has, like, that old record player, like, that you carried around, like, a little suitcase.
It's kind of commentary over the fact today, you know, we live in an internet-based fucking online culture. It's not the way it was in the 60s, and even in the 80s, shit was done in person. If you were the shit, you had to be the shit in person, not online. You know, and that's what she was seeing. She was like, man, these people fucking were on their game. And some of the dudes were on their game, but they weren't all good.
Yeah.
That's
the thing. And part of the, I think part of the her journey in the movie is like her loss of illusions.
Yeah.
Because she didn't live through the 60s, obviously. So she was seeing it through very idealized eyes, like I said, Carnaby Street and all that really cool, like swinging 60s type of situation. And, but there was like a dark side to it too. And like her coming to terms with that is kind of like part of her character arc.
Yeah. And then like, they show London in the 60s and they've got it fucking, I don't know if it was a set or if that was CG, but all these neon fucking lights and signs, and she's tripping out. She's tripping out through the eyes of Sandy. Because she's living through Sandy and shit during that one.
I was happy to discover that they did actually shoot this in Soho.
Oh, okay.
So it's not a set.
What?
Okay. I'm sure that they, I don't know if they CGI'd, they like to make CGI'd. It look old, CGI'd it, or set dressed certain streets or whatever. But yeah.
That was pretty damn convincing. That had to be CG. All that neon on all those buildings going all the way up to the ceiling and everything. I think that must have been CG. I think it was, they were in that location. But
yeah.
I think they CG'd over everything.
Yeah, they probably did. But all the stuff in the modern day, that was all shot in Soho, which is unusual because you don't usually, I mean, particularly like in big city shoots, you know, famously in movies shot in the United States, if it's supposed to be New York City, it's almost always Toronto because it's, you know, really hard to get permits for New York City. It's because it's so busy and it's kind of expensive and everything. But this actually was shot in Soho. So it was nice to see, like, because I've been to, like, Carnaby Street and all that area. Yeah. So it was kind of neat to see it all. Hasn't changed much since I've been there. But that was probably, like, 2009, I think, was the last time I was there. But, yeah, it kind of looks the same. I just thought that was, like, pretty cool. And like I said, I liked that they got, like, a lot of 60s era actors like Diana Rigg, you know, Rita Tushingham, whatever. She played the grandma. Terrence Stamp, obviously. You know, so they had, so that was kind of like an homage. So I thought that was kind of nice too. But yeah, this is like a really, really good flick. Like I said, I wouldn't mind seeing this one again. Next one we got to see is Antlers. So nobody tell me. I'm not, like, don't spoil anything. Don't tell me if you thought it was good or bad or whatever. It's like, because I just want to kind of see it. Oh, like, we saw a preview. This is the first time I'm hearing of this, amazingly. I'm, like, which is not up on my game, I guess. But we saw a preview before this movie for the new Guillermo del Toro movie, which I think is called Nightmare Alley. And that looks pretty cool, too. That looked like it's set in, like, the 1920s. Sort of. It looked like sort of a carnival sort of thing, and I was like, ooh, that looks right up my alley.
They're in there. Yeah. They're in there arguing about Tom Hardy's fucking height, that he was too big to be Mad Max, and fucking Tom Hardy's fucking short, from what I remember. He is jacked, though.
Yeah, I thought he was, I didn't know if he was necessarily short, but I thought he was just, like, average height.
Yeah, he's maybe 5'8", 5'7".
See, that's what I thought, like 5'7", or something. That's not short.
Yeah, an inch or two taller than me.
Yeah, that's not short.
But, Dr. Derek from More Plates, More Dates covered fucking Tom Hardy's steroid cycles. So we all know what he took. No shame. We just got to out motherfuckers. That shit does not happen naturally. You cannot gain 30 pounds in 4 months. Okay.
Well, unless it's 30 pounds of fat. You can do that.
He got fucking big.
Just by eating McDonald's every day.
He got real big for that one movie where he played that fucking fighter, boxer. And then after that, he did Bane. And he was pretty big. He still is pretty big. Not to take anything away from him. He trains hard. I've seen videos of him training for those movies physically. And what's funny is that he'll get big and then he'll fuck himself up for another role. Those actors got it hard. Like, you built all that shit and then you're going to lose it all just for this role? I'd pass up on that role and take another role that you could keep that body. So I don't know how their endocrine systems go put up with that shit.
Well, look at fucking, what's his name? Like, oh, Jesus Christ. Christian Bale.
He's fucking nuts.
Like, yeah.
Those dudes are nuts.
I mean, that is going to catch up. Look at what he did for, like, The Machinist, where he basically starved himself down to nothing and he looked like... I saw that movie and I'm like, that can't be real.
Yeah.
It was. He ate nothing but like gum and cigarettes. And then, he didn't eat the cigarettes, obviously. But then, when he was in, remember he played fucking Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
And he porked out.
Yeah.
Like, he gained all that weight. And I'm just like, dude, you are going to die. Like, your heart cannot fucking take it.
Well, not only that, just your fucking endocrine system, your ability to fucking produce testosterone. And I know they're all on exogenous shit. They inject all those hormones into them. But still, your body does not like any of that up and down and up and down. It's hard enough on even just a fucking pro wrestler of having a normal weightlifter's physique and metabolism, and then take roids for a little while and then come off of them. Just that is enough to cause a motherfucker to get fat if you do it wrong, all right? All this shit about roiding out for long periods of time and then starving yourself down to nothing, that's way down in the negative zone, you know what I mean? And then coming back and being fat and all
I don't know how his body can take it. I really don't.
Shouldn't be able to do it, not for long. Well, they're making millions of dollars of movies, so I guess they're just like, fuck it, I want that $6 million.
I guess. And the thing about it is
that... It wouldn't be worth my health, man.
No. I mean, they have the money, and they obviously have trainers and, you know, doctors and shit, on retainer, like, to tell them, hey, this is how you do it the best way. Right. So it's like, yeah, but still, it's like, a body is just a body. I don't care how much money you got. Eventually, you're going to wear that shit out.
You can only do that so many times. But Tom Hardy, though, he's... studying what he's done. I have a lot of respect for Tom Hardy. I like his work. I like his work ethic. I like what he did with himself. I think he'd make a great Bond. And I think he's about the right age. He could probably pick up James Bond now.
Yeah,
he is British. Mm-hmm. And James Bond has to be British. And he has to be a male. Okay. And James Bond is a white guy. If you want a black spy, go get Felix. And have a CIA story. Remember Felix?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, the last Felix was a black dude, and I fucking loved that character. What's that actor's name? He was also in the first. He played one of the guys in the very first Samuel L. Jackson Shaft movies. He played a guy in there. I forgot that guy's name, but he. So there's all kinds of stuff. Just leave them characters alone, man. Fucking James Bond's a white dude, and he's British.
John Gora says, I heard his prison movie Bronson was good.
Oh, fantastic.
He said he never saw it. Yeah, it's really good.
Fantastic.
It's a little bit surrealist.
Yeah, it's like...
But I like that. It kind of reminded us of Clockwork Orange a little bit.
It's a Clockwork Orange
but funny.
Style. Yeah.
Like I said, and it has like a lot of kind of surreal aspects to it. It's super strange, but I really dug it.
Loved it. Loved
it. Yeah, Sophie sent it to us, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Sophie sent us the Blu-ray. But yeah, he's really, really good in that. So yeah, you should probably see it. It's weird, but it's good. I liked
it. When he trained for that movie, he physically trained for it, but he trained as if he could only use four walls, no weights. And he was eating shitty food, which that's what you would eat in prison. So it was nothing but just standing on his head and doing things.
Yeah, he was trying to be as realistic as possible.
And it's because that inmate, Bronson, also was writing books about how to work out in prison. He evidently wrote books on it. Wouldn't mind actually to see that. Because that's how he gained size in prison, was just standing on his head and doing weird fucking...
Like push-ups, like against the wall.
Yeah, using his own body weight to work out with. And see, they'd put him in... And then he would talk about, what happens if they put you in isolation and you're in that little bitty tiny cell that you can only stand up in? How do you work out in that? And he's worked out ways to how to work out in that thing.
Wish that's some useful ass information. Just saying.
Yeah. Well, that sounds crazy, But if you're maybe if you're a professional soldier or fucking some kind of contractor, that'd be good to know because...
Well, like I said, it's useful information.
If you get captured and you're in fucking confinement, being captured by the enemy, you're going to need something to keep your mind fucking sane from long periods of incarceration and possibly torture. So if you can have some way to keep yourself challenged, you know, outside of what they're doing to you, that could help you keep your mind together.
Yeah.
You know, so that would be very good. Good. I like to know weird shit like that, just in case. You never know what could happen.
Well, yeah. Know? I mean, you know. I mean, you can't be prepared for every contingency, no. But, you know.
It's good to know how other people have survived shit.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Rickshaw says, Fury Road Part 2, please. Right? I really wish they would make another one.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind actually to see a spinoff of Furiosa.
That's what I thought they were going to do.
Yeah.
I would watch the Furiosa movie. Come on, she was rad.
Yep. There should have been a couple. The thing is, those things are difficult and expensive to make.
They are, yeah.
Although the director, what's his name, George
Miller.
George Miller, yeah. George Miller said he has a team of guys. He trusts each one of them to continue after he goes.
Yeah, he's prepared for that.
Yeah, he's prepared, but like, if he does, he's got a team of dudes that he says can handle it. That they know exactly what a Max movie is about.
Because man, Fury Road was so
funny. Yeah. It's got to be live action. Those got to be real cars, and you really have to wreck shit.
Yeah. That was what was so...
That's what's good.
Man, I loved that movie. I think we saw that 6 times in the theater.
Yep.
And that was before we had A-List, so we paid for
just
it.
Just keep watching it.
Yeah. We just paid for it 6 fucking times. Yeah. It was just so good. And it was so good to see, like, on the big screen. Like, we have it at home, too, and we've watched it at home, like, on the big screen TV, but it was way better in the theater.
John says Cape Fear was the last time De Niro was ever able to do any of that craziness. Because, yeah, that was actually his... That was actually a really good movie.
Man, we should do a matinee on that, because I haven't seen that in a long time. I remember really digging that movie. I think it might be on Amazon Prime, now that I'm thinking about it. I can't remember. Well, no, maybe that's the original. I can't remember. Yeah. But, yeah. I've seen the original, too, but I've seen the Robert De Niro one, like, more recently. All right, so is that all we have
That's all I got to say about it.
Yeah, so, yeah, seriously, I really, really liked Last Night in Soho. Like I said, I was expecting to like it because I said, man, that looks super cool. But I liked it way better than I was expecting to. And, like, if you've seen it, tell me if you saw the twist coming, because I totally did not. You know what I mean? And usually I can see stuff coming, but I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. There were a couple twists, actually.
Yeah, I mean, and the first twist, I kind of saw that coming, but I only saw it coming, like, a couple of minutes before... It was kind of revealed.
Yeah.
So that wasn't that big a deal. But that last twist, I did not see that coming at
Shit to see right now would be Dune and this one.
Yeah.
If you want to see a movie, if you've seen Dune, go ahead and see this one. It's worth it.
Yeah. I said, if Antlers is good, I'm going to go see Antlers sometime before the end of this week.
Yeah.
And we'll see if that one's good too, because I've been looking forward to that one. And then we'll see what happens. So like I said, that Nightmare Alley one is coming out. I think that's the beginning of December. I'll have to go see that one, too. That looks pretty cool. But, yeah, so I guess that'll do it for today's show. And we'll be back tomorrow for the main episode, because tomorrow's Wednesday already. 5 p.m., like I said, it's going to be about doppelgangers, which should be kind of a fun show. Going to be about... I was telling him last night, I was like, I'm going to do... Because I think there's, like, an app... where you can find your, whatever they call it nowadays, your twin stranger or whatever, where, you know, it uses facial recognition software to, like, find your doppelganger, like, somewhere on the earth. So I said, well, I'm going to have to remember to do that before the show to see if I have a doppelganger somewhere, because that'd be pretty freaky. But yeah, so we will see you guys tomorrow evening at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and thanks for dropping by. Bye.